As we begin another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word, I invite you to join me in Numbers chapter 32. Chapter 32 is taking place on the east side of the Jordan River. The plains of Moab is where Israel is camped out. They've just finished a very successful, miraculously successful reprisal war at God's direction against the Midianites, and they have gained an awful lot of animals as possessions. It's all happening toward the end of the 40th year of the Exodus, just months before they're going to cross over into the Promised Land and begin making that their own. And this is the story that takes place at this moment. Chapter 32, the people of Reuben, that's the tribe, and the people of Gad, another tribe, had a very great number of livestock. Not surprising. They just collected an awful lot from the Midianite reprisal war. And they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead. This is kind of the centerpiece of the eastern annexed territory of Israel. They got it because they defended themselves against the Amorites, Sihon, and Og, and God just gave them all that territory from the plains of Moab all the way up to the foothills of Mount Hermon. And so the people of Gad and the people of Reuben came and said to Moses and Eleazar the priest and to the chiefs of the Midianite, or to the chief of the congregation, and then it lists a whole bunch of regional cities in this new territory. Verse 4, the land that he who is struck down before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your children, your servants have livestock. And they said, if we found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants for a possession. Don't take us across the Jordan. So they make a special request. We'd like the annexed territories, please, because it really looks good for running the livestock that we have a bunch of right now. Now, I told you that would seem at just first glance to be a perfectly reasonable request. But it ticks Moses off. And that's the big story now. Verse 6, Moses said to the people of Gad and to the people of Reuben, shall your brothers go to the war while you sit here? Why will you discourage the heart of the people of Israel from going over into the land that he who is has given them? Your fathers did this when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol, and they saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the people of Israel from going into the land that he who is had given them. And he who is's anger was kindled on that day. And he swore, saying, surely none of the men who came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me. None except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed he who is. And he who is his anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all that generation that had done evil in the sight of he who is was gone. And now behold, you've risen in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to increase still more the fierce anger of he who is against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will again abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all this people. So you can tell from the very long sentences here, Moses is upset. He thinks this is a repeat of what started the timeout period of the wilderness wanderings 40 years ago, and that these Reubenites, these Gadites, are actually discouraging the Israelis from going into the Promised Land, and they're going to bring wrath on everybody. And that is, I don't think, that was not their point. I don't think so. If they intended to ditch the conquest of the land, then shame on them. But I don't think that's exactly what they had in mind. But Moses seems to believe that that was where they were going with all of this. And he basically chews them out over it. And so their response, I think, demonstrates their sincerity to be committed to the entering into the promised land and occupying it as God wanted them to do. And so it's my belief, and it's just an opinion, so that's all it's worth. It is my belief that Moses overreacted. And so this is what they say back to him, verse 16. Then they came near to him and said, "We will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and the cities for our little ones." So this is what we're going to do. We just want to have places for our animals to be taken care of. We want a few of these cities that we're going to put our families into, the ones that have minor children. And then we will take up arms, ready to go before the people of Israel until we have brought them to their place. So they are volunteering to be the vanguard. They're volunteering to be the point of any type of military operation in the Promised Land. All they really just wanted to do was to get this prime livestock land. That's all they were saying. Our little ones shall live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. So there's still some of these Amorite civilians hanging around and maybe some survivors of the Amorite wars. So they're going to put their family members and a representative militia to protect them in fortified cities. And then verse 18, we will not return to our homes until each of the people of Israel have gained their inheritance. So this is our guarantee to you. We'll be in the military, taking over the promised land. We'll be the vanguard. We won't go home until that issue is settled. Verse 19, for we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has come to us on this side of the Jordan to the east. So this is the clear-cut understanding from the get-go. We don't want to be part of the dividing up of the land on the west side of the Jordan. We would prefer this property because it is so perfect for what we want to do, run animals. So we will fight in the conquest, but this is where we want to come back to as our home. Verse number 20. So Moses can completely calm down now, I think, in my opinion, said to them, if you will do this, if you will take up arms to go before he who is, for the war, and every armed man of you will pass over the Jordan before he who is, until he's driven out his enemies from before him, and the land is subdued before he who is, then after you shall return and be free of obligation to he who is and to Israel, meaning further military obligation. Once they accomplish the initial occupation of the Promised Land, then Reuben and Gad can go back home to their other area, and the tribes on the west side will be responsible for expanding their territory under God's leadership. That's what Moses is saying. And this land shall be your possession before he who is. So yes, I agree. I agree to your terms. You may have this as your inheritance, provided you follow through. But, verse 23, if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against he who is, and be sure your sin will find you out. Now, we've quoted that last phrase a lot, at least I have. And this is the context in which it comes. If you make a promise to do something, and then you don't follow through with it, that sin will catch up with you. because it's not right. So verse 24, build cities for your little ones. Actually, they're not going to have to build massive brand new cities. They just need to repair some of the ones that they captured. And folds for your sheep, and do what you have promised. The people of Gad, the people of Reuben, said to Moses, your servants will do as my Lord commands. Now, they show Moses great deference. The oldest amongst this new generation here is only about 59. And Moses is like 120. Caleb and Joshua, the only other survivors from the original generation that came out in the Exodus, they're in their 80s. So these guys are just, they are the young ones in this story. And so Moses, the people say, your servants will do as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our livestock, all our cattle will remain there in the cities of Gilead. Now, Gilead is kind of that area to the immediate east and southeast of the Sea of Galilee. That's Gilead proper. But your servants will pass over every man who is armed for war before he who is to battle, as my Lord commands. So, Moses gave command concerning them to Eleazar the priest, the religious leader, and to Joshua the son of Nun, the military leader that's going into the promised land, and to the heads of the fathers' houses of the tribes of the people of Israel, so the government leadership, the Sanhedrin leadership that's going into the promised land. Moses said to them, if the people of Gad and the people of Reuben, every man who is armed in battle, before he who is, will pass with you over the Jordan, and the land shall be subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for possession. However, if they do not pass over with you armed, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. So if they come, then yes, they can have the land on the east. If they don't come, no, they don't get the land on the east. You just designate a place on the west side and say, this is your property, get over here and get it. The people of Gad and the people of Reuben answered, what he who is has said to your servants, we will do. We will pass over armed before he who is into the land of Canaan, and the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us beyond the Jordan. And so the deal has been struck. So Moses gave to them the people of Gad, to the people of Reuben, and we've got a new player in this story now, to the half-tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. So once the deal becomes public and it's coming to its conclusion, about half of the massive tribe of Manasseh go, hey, you know what? We'd kind of like to settle over on that side. And so that's why we end up with Manasseh, the full tribe of Manasseh, having property that stretches across the Jordan Valley to the east and to the west. Now, we'll refer to them as the half-tribe of Manasseh, based simply because of geography. One half of it's on the east side and the other half is on the west side. And so this is all the kingdom, the former kingdom of Og, king of Bashan. Bashan is another name for the region to the east and somewhat to the northeast of the Sea of Galilee. What eventually will be called Galintis in the New Testament time period, we call it Golan today. The land and its cities with their territories, the cities of the land throughout the country, and the people of Gad built, and then it's got all the different fortified cities that they built, the name changes for some of them. Verse 38, the second half, they gave other names to the cities that they built. The sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, went to Gilead. They captured it, dispossessed the Ammonites who were in it, so the remaining Ammonite forces. And Moses gave Gilead to Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he settled in it. And Yair, the son of Manasseh, went and captured their villages and called them Havaot Yair, which has to do with the villages belonging to this guy named Yair. And Nobah went and captured Kenat and its villages and called it Nobah after his own name. So that's all of their cleanup work that they do in order to secure their territory on the east side of the Jordan Valley. Now, we've already seen chapter 33, quite a bit of it at least, because it has the detailed travel stops, the tabernacle resting places during the 40 years of Israel's journey from Egypt to Mount Sinai and then through the wilderness wanderings until they ended up at the plains of Moab. So what we're going to do is we'll skip over all that part and pick up in verse 50. Numbers 33, verse 50. He who is spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. So Jericho is on the west side, and the Israelis are encamped on the east side. And he said, speak to the people of Israel and say to them. So some more instructions from God through Moses. When you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, so that's coming up soon, next spring actually, then you shall drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their metal images and demolish all their high places. So when you go into the promised land, you will trash anything that is attached to pagan worship, idolatry. It all has to come down. It all has to be destroyed. Verse 53, you shall take possession of the land and settle in it, for I have given the land to you to possess it. You shall inherit the land by lot according to your clans. So the divine lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision belongs to the Lord. That's what's written in Proverbs later. God is going to designate which tribes get which regions. And then the tribal groups will subdivide their areas up according to that same divine lot to all the different named family groups within their tribes. Verse number 54 continues. To a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance. We already took a census, so we know how many family groups there are in each tribe. And so they, depending on the terrain, because some areas are going to be, you know, hilly, lots of rolling territory with maybe a lot of tree cover and things like that. All of that's going to be taken in consideration when the land is divided up into tribal regions. The ones that have more families are going to need more places for those families to settle in. That's the point. Wherever the lot falls for anyone, that shall be his. According to the tribes of your fathers, you shall inherit it. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides. And that's one of the most ancient representations of that saying. We say, they are a thorn in my side, meaning that they just are constantly pestering us. And they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell. And I will do to you as I thought to do to them. So this is a warning from God. We will see this warning repeated over and over again. the Canaanites are in trouble because of their sin. They have gotten much worse since the time of Abraham. When God told Abraham, the sins of the Canaanites are not yet complete. So God has already warned the Canaanites that they're in big time trouble. I have no doubt that he sent prophets and dreams and visions and things like that to tell them that they should have repented, and because they didn't, they're going to lose their property. So the Israelis are going to be like the sheriff in serving an eviction notice. And God tells them, don't you dare let any of these people stick around. Because if they do, they will cause nothing but trouble for you in spiritual matters. So you're going to trash their worship ritual things, and you are not going to let any of these people stay around. They have to leave. They have to be evicted. Now, God has already told them that he will miraculously, if they trust him, if they'll keep the covenant, he will miraculously chase a lot of these people out. He talks about using the bee or the wasp in order to chase them out. So the Israelis' responsibility is to not allow them to come back. They have to keep this land clear of idolatry and idolaters. Because if they don't, and they start acting the same way, eventually God will have to deal with them as idolaters, as sinners, and they will have to be kicked out of the land, which, spoiler alert, is exactly what happens. Chapter 34. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, command the people of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land of Canaan, this is the land that shall fall to you for an inheritance, the land of Canaan as defined by its borders. Now, this is where it would be helpful to have a map with some of the ancient names on it. Now, unfortunately, some of the ancient names, we don't know exactly where they're at anymore. But we have a very reasonable guess for most of this stuff. So here is what we're seeing. Your south side shall be from the wilderness of Zin alongside Edom. Now, we know where Edom's at. It is to the south and east of the south basin of the Dead Sea. The mountain, Mount Hor, where Aaron died and was buried, is at the southwest corner, pretty much, of Edom. And then across to the west from there is Kadesh Barnea, the authentic, I think, site for Kadesh Barnea. So that, from that border, goes from the south end of the south bay of the Dead Sea down halfway toward the Gulf of Aqaba. So that's the southeast border. Continuing, your southern border shall run from the end of the Salt Sea on the east, so that's the one we were just talking about, and your border shall turn south of the ascent of Akrabim, which is the ascent of scorpions, it'll cross to Zin, and its limit shall be south of Kadesh Barnea. So I've shown you multiple times where I think Kadesh Barnea is at, halfway between the bottom part of the Dead Sea and the top of the Gulf of Aqaba. It's at the mouth of a wadi system. Now, if you follow that wadi system up to its starting point, you're on a ridgeline. And just over that ridgeline is the start of another wadi system that dumps into the Mediterranean Sea. That wadi system is the Brook of Egypt that we're about to read about. So it says, then it shall go on to Hazar Adar and pass along to Azmon, and the border shall turn from Asmon to the brook of Egypt. So that's the wadi that dumps into the Med. And its limit shall be at the sea. So that's the southeast and southern border of the Promised Land. For the western border, you shall have the Great Sea and its coast. This shall be your western border. That's really easy to define because that's the Med. This shall be your northern border. From the Great Sea, you shall draw a line to Mount Hor. From Mount Hor, you shall draw a line to Lebo Hamat. Now, we don't know where exactly where Mount Hor is in the north. Lebo Hamat seems to be the entrance to the valley that heads northward to the ancient city of Hamat. And it's just a little bit north of where Dan is, the city of Dan. And then the limit of that border shall be at Zedad. And then the border shall extend to Ziphron, and its limit shall be at Hazar Enan. This shall be your northern border. So basically, you're coming across to the foothills of Mount Hermon, which is north and east of Dan, and where Caesarea Philippi eventually is, quite a bit north and east of the Sea of Galilee. Then you're going to draw a line for your eastern border from Hazar Enan to Shepham. And the border shall go down from Shepham to Riblah. And then the border shall go down to the Sea of Kinnereth on the east. So that's down to Harp Lake or the Sea of Galilee. And then it's going to follow the Jordan from there. But we've run out of time, so I will have to come back to these border definitions later. What we're seeing here is the definition of the Promised Land itself and not the annexed territory. And so we'll have to talk about that as a later border conversation.